This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash, and on Building Bridges.
Union rights for $8 million at stake? Oh, yeah. With Ross Eisenbray, labor lawyer and vice president of the Economic Policy Institute, and Deborah Berger, president of the California Nurses Association. You know, Ken, if you've ever shown a coworker how to perform a task or been asked to look over someone else's work, you may not be considered an employee. You may not be considered a worker for the purposes of collective bargaining. Well, the Bush-packed National Labor Relations Board is considering three cases that could alter the definition of an employee and which could change the basic rights of workers in America.
But before we talk with our guests, the upcoming decision by the NLRB has caught the attention of Stephen Colbert, who recently took on the National Labor Relations Board, and the potentially dangerous impact its rulings could have on workers on the Word segment of his show, The Colbert Report, on Comedy Central.
Now, longtime viewers of this program know that I am a labor law fanatic. That's not a secret. I cannot get enough of the National Labor Relations Board decisions. They are gripping. I keep them in a bookshelf next to my Safety First posters. Well, you can naturally imagine my excitement when I found out that a group of nurses in Kentucky are fighting their hospital for the right to unionize. A fight that brings us to tonight's word. Solidarity. As in, me and all my management buddies are in solidarity about hating unions. I mean, what has a union ever done for anybody anyway? Absolutely nothing. That's why these hospitals are trying to save these nurses the hassle of collective bargaining by giving them something they really need. A new title. Supervisors. Because once the nurses are categorized as supervisors, they will be ineligible to join a union. And nurses, why would you want to? You're not labor anymore. There's no more of the boss man asking you to put in a little overtime this weekend. No. You'll be the boss. Plus, you'll be getting all sorts of perks. You'll get a new nameplate, new business cards, and a newfound respect. Now, if the National Labor Relations Board approves these forced promotions, we can make everyone in America a supervisor. Now, some of you are going to ask me, Stephen, how can everyone in the country be a supervisor? There'll be no one left to supervise. Well, folks, folks, it's simple. The CEO will supervise the office manager. The office manager will supervise the janitor. And the janitor will supervise the CEO. That way, they're all equal. It's the great circle of life, like the nitrogen cycle. The cow is the economy. And the workers are grass, which the cow eats and digests. And then the workers are pooped back onto the playing field. And management is riding the cow. I don't... Point is, you can't unionize. It'll kill the cow. But making every worker a supervisor will actually stimulate the cow. As management, you're expected to have a very professional-looking desk loaded with professional-looking stuff. You got stress balls, miniature Zen gardens, and putting greens. Think of all the people this will employ. But we can't do this alone. Folks, it is time for management and labor to put aside their differences and come together as management to exploit labor. And that's the word. We'll be right back.
And with us to talk about this, we have Ross Eisenbray, labor lawyer and vice president of the Economic Policy Institute, and Deborah Berger, president of the California Nurses Association. And welcome to Building Bridges.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, am I exaggerating, or are the rights of untold numbers of workers really in danger with what is known as the Kentucky River cases? and other cases currently pending before the National Labor Relations Board. Ross?
Most people who have looked at this closely are betting that the National Labor Relations Board will wipe out collective bargaining rights for more than 8 million workers. You're exactly right. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has a category that they've measured that fits this level of supervision that we're talking about. It's 8.3 million workers who are now covered by the National Labor Relations Act who would be found to be supervisors if the board does what the employers are asking them to do and that most people expect them to do, which is to say that anybody at the lowest level of supervision where you don't have the power, an employee doesn't have the power to hire or fire or discipline or reward or even do an evaluation of another employee, but just has enough authority to direct another employee's work. And you'll hear from the nurses much more about this, but the best example probably is where an RN in a hospital has the authority to tell another employee, a nurse's aide or an orderly, to do something, to help a patient. And just by virtue of giving that much direction, they'd be turned into a supervisor, lose their rights under the National Labor Relations Act, and their union would no longer be able to bargain for them.
Well, let's ask the nurses. Deborah, you're with the California Nurses Association. How would this ruling affect your union and other nurses throughout the country?
We're most gravely concerned because nurses would become at-will employees. They would risk losing their retirement benefits, their health care coverage, all of the salaries and the conditions for getting those salaries that we've negotiated so far. But what's of even more grave concern for the California Nurses Association, besides losing our members and losing strong leaders in nursing, is the fact that what's at stake for our patients. Nurses, historically, without union representation, have not been able to adequately advocate for their patients, so there's a clear threat to patient safety with this ruling as well. And RNs have to be able to intervene on behalf of patients when in hospitals, nursing homes, or other issues, and the only way that we've been able to make any headway is by acting collectively. This will virtually gut a lot of the patient protections that we've already won in contracts.
I'm beginning to be overwhelmed, and I'm not sure I fully digest. The suggestion is that somebody who is a senior or an accomplished worker who is asked for some advice or gives some suggestion that is generally helpful to the job, whether it's in construction or nursing or virtually any industry, can thus be labeled a supervisor and merely by virtue of that be removed from...
Or even in their job title. One of the things that the nurses are concerned about is we have charge nurses. And you could have the job charge nurse as a description for filling in for the charge nurse, say one day a month, 2 days a month. That's not a large part of your job, but it says must be able to fill in for charge nurse during vacations. And all of a sudden, even though you're not doing the charge nurse job, you're all of a sudden deemed a supervisor.
Ross, this I know can get very complicated. Would there be a prohibition against joining a union, or would workers just not be covered by the protections of the National Labor Relations Board? And just to throw in something else, would those workers still under contract be represented during the term of that contract, or would they just be tossed aside?
Well, it depends on the employer. There's a number of things that the California Nurses Association is doing right now. We're in bargaining with Kaiser, and we're bargaining language that says, despite what the National Labor Relations Board decides, that we want them to recognize our nurses that are, quote, deemed supervisors as bargaining unit members. What the employer decides to do depends on, I think, the area that they're in and whether they're terribly anti-union or whether they've managed to finally work with other unions. But it looks grim when you start looking at the ramifications for this impending decision and how little we have, or if at all, legal recourse to this final decision.
Yeah, she's right. It's left to the whim of the employer. If they voluntarily recognize the union, they can go on bargaining with the union. But at any point, they can decide the union's asking for too much, the union's pushing too hard, or management could change. And a new management could come in and say, we don't want to bargain with the union over these supervisors, and we won't do it anymore. And the union would have no recourse. They couldn't, for example, strike to keep the supervisors in the union. They really would have no legal recourse at that point to protect their members.
Quick question. If the nurses in this case, although there are other workers besides nurses that are affected,
yeah,
if they're
currently
under a contract, does that mean that they're no longer under that contract?
No. As far as I understand it, they have the obligation to uphold what they agreed to until the termination of the contract, and then everything's up and open.
That's right. And most contracts last about 3 years.
Yeah.
Now, Ross, I want to track a little bit. The Congress began to, in the 40s, unravel a lot of rights, and then there was, of course, the onerous Taft-Hartley Act. But help trace for us this deconstruction under federal labor law of rights of workers that now takes us to an administrative body of unelected hearing officers who can unravel the bargaining rights, the labor rights of potentially millions of people.
Well, the National Labor Relations Act, ever since it was first enacted in the 30s, has put the National Labor Relations Board, which is five members appointed by the president, in charge of interpreting the law, being the first level of interpretation of the law. The act was changed in 1949 to exclude supervisors, and there's been a lot of debate over what Congress meant when it did it in 1949. But for all of these years, the level of supervisor we're talking about has been covered, and unions have bargained, and the board has upheld the right of those employees to be in bargaining units and to be protected by all of the rights of the National Labor Relations Act. So this is something that has evolved as the board has gotten more and more hostile to unions and the courts. Frankly, it's not just the board, but the courts, who are also appointed by the president and are political in that sense, have been interpreting the act more and more narrowly more expansively in this sense, to exclude more and more workers.
In fact, the Supreme Court was the group, the body that sent back, overturned the Labor Relations Board decision and sent it back to the National Labor Relations Board for clarification because they still didn't like the definition of the term supervisor and wanted to, you know, really define that in a more expansive manner. So it was really the Supreme Court that did part of the damage.
Right. The Clinton National Labor Relations Board interpreted supervisor to only include people who were acting in the interest of the employer and whose independent judgment was involved in their decision-making, so that if the judgment that they were making on directing someone's work were professional, were technical, they would say that was not in the interest of the employer and it was not the exercise of judgment that the act called for to exclude somebody from the definition of employee. It would have to be something that was more labor relations related, something that was directly in the interest of the employer as the employer. And the court did reject that interpretation, and now it's up for grabs.
I still want to drive home the point that we are talking about really almost any category of work will be affected, including broadcast and construction, and since we're looking...
There are cases involving journalists, yes.
Indeed. So one of the things is, because there's a lot of cynicism about the organized labor movement today, but let's give some preview of what this kind of determination can mean in terms of the actual rights and benefits of workers. If these cases are ruled affirmatively by the National Labor Relations Board and employees are labeled as supervisors and in effect become almost like independent contractors, What are these specific rights? What will happen with health care? What will happen with grievances? How does all that play out?
Deborah, do you want to take that?
Well, the concern that I have specifically is that by virtue of our registered nurse's license, we are supposed to advocate on behalf of patients. Now the Supreme Court is coming in and saying that we are using our independent judgment on behalf of the employer. My concern is that because this is a federal ruling, it will supersede our state licensure, so virtually gutting patient protections and the duty of the nurse to advocate for their patients. The other thing is that in the daily carrying out of the nurse's responsibility to provide patient care, they're making decisions that will either harm or benefit a patient based on their judgment. And now it appears that we now have to look at the economic interest of the employer, which then puts us in a real conflict on how we proceed, how we provide care for our patients. And we believe that that's another issue that we're going to have to take a look at. And the fact that you're trying to point out to your listeners that this is going to affect almost anyone, including the person at Taco Bell that has any independent judgment to say, I'll waive the fee for your Coke because something happened. All of a sudden, these minimum wage people are also going to be told they're supervisors and then thus unable to qualify for overtime pay.
Well, and there are millions of workers outside of healthcare, cashiers, electricians, mm-hmm. bookkeepers, all these occupations have been involved in cases where, because they have the authority to say to another employee, don't put the load that you're delivering there, put it over here on this side of the dock. They're turned into a supervisor, which makes them an at-will employee. They no longer have the rights under the Act to act in concert with their fellow employees, and that means that when they protest about something, if they complain to their employer that things are too hot or there's something unsafe about the work they're doing, they're no longer protected under the National Labor Relations Act and can be fired. And there's no one who can strike on their behalf. There's no one who can file a grievance on their behalf. They're on their own at that point. And it's a very uneven situation for employees when they're on their own with their employer. It's a huge change for millions of workers.
Deborah, nurses throughout the country, and your union in particular, have been vocally protesting this impending action by the National Labor Relations Board. What have you been doing? What have people been doing throughout the country to protest about this?
They've been joining us. We've been working with leadership in the AFL-CIO. We've been working with the nurses in Maine, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Illinois, as many people as we can get together to really start speaking against this before it actually comes into play. We're extremely concerned because we just finished fighting Arnold Schwarzenegger on the safe staffing ratios. That is also at risk because, as your other guest pointed out, a single person can't go up against the deep pockets of these corporations. And if they decide not to follow the rules and regulations that have been set forth in law, a single individual isn't going to have the success to prevail. And nurses understand that, and our communities understand that as well.
There was a slogan I always liked, what do you do when you're under attack? Fight back, fight back. And
exactly.
We've got an awful lot of fronts to fight back on. How can people tune into the Nurses Association so they can find out about what they've been doing? And then I want Ross to put on his VP position, his hat from the Economic Policy Institute, and tell us how we can find out about the great work that they do.
We actually have on our website a link for nurse alerts or tell-a-friend alerts on the actions that we're taking. And our website is calnurse.org, www.calnurse.org. And there are several links so that you can write to your congresspeople and attend rallies or get more information about what's happening. As it unfolds, we'll be out there in the streets, so it's there and available.
And Ross, how can people find out more about the Economic Policy Institute, which is chock full of critical information for those who understand the conjuncture of course, race and class in our society?
Well, we're at www.epi.net. So you're right. There are a lot of fights, and we have a lot of information about what's happening in government to affect people's economic rights.
And clearly, the National Labor Relations Act, which is the nation's primary law determining the rights of employees to join unions and bargain collectively, well, that's got to be looked at, and it's got to be looked at within the context of those who pack the board, i.e. the Bush administration, who's packed the National Labor Relations Board with its officers. So we've got an awful lot of work to do, and I'd like to thank you both for alerting us to this very, very significant issue that's pending before the National Labor Relations Board. And thank you, Ross Eisenbry, who is the Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute and a labor lawyer, and our good friend Deborah Berger, President of the California Nurses Association.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This has been Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And we go out with John O'Connor singing his The Ballad of Labor Law Reform.
Back in 35, the unions were growing. They were working hard and singing a union song. There was a lot of realizing that good old organizing was the only way to make the union strong. The only way to make the union strong. Oh, the companies paid out starvation wages, and their cruelty and greed were quite well known. And there was no law in the land that would lend a helping hand. The workers had to do it on their own. They knew they had to do it on their own. Franklin Roosevelt, he stepped out of the White House, and he said, I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. He said, the country's on demand, and the government's your friend, and the Wagner Act, it is the thing for you. The Wagner Act, it is the thing for you. So now the workers had a right to join a union, and this legislation seemed without a flaw. But standing in the foyers were 100,000 lawyers waiting for to tinker with the law, Lord, Lord, waiting for to tinker with the law. Oh, the strikes and the sit-downs and the boycotts kept the union movement growing fast. But the labor law kept changing, and all this rearranging was stripping away the weapons of our class, Lord, Lord. Stripping away the weapons of our class. Oh, the list of rules and laws kept getting longer, and the government would go to any length to make up some amendment to keep us more dependent on the labor laws instead of on our strength. The labor laws instead of on our strength. So when Ronald Reagan came into the White House, and he steered this country sharply to the right, by the time his big steamroller crushed the air traffic controllers, well, the union had forgotten how to fight, Lord, Lord. The unions had forgotten how to fight. Now you want to pass another law to save the unions, and you say this bill is fair and just and wise. Well, that is fine and dandy, but something much more handy would be if once more we learned to organize. If once more we learn to organize. Because the union strength is in its independence, and the laws are made to keep us solid bay. So kick your leaders in their asses, let's organize the masses. That's the only way we'll win the day, Lord, Lord. That's the only way we'll win the day. That's the only way we'll win the day, Lord, Lord. That's the only way we'll win the day.